I kind of had a chuckle of your tweet to Katie Gay becoming the first female referee in NHL history. A lot of sucking up there to her, but we know the first bad call she makes against you, you'd rip her open a new one, like the rest of the officials you do.
Well, keep in mind, this battle for equality and the treatment of women in sports, keep in mind that Brian Burke has been at the forefront of this since women's hockey became even mildly popular. And I've been a big backer and a big supporter for more than a decade now. So these people are coming to it lately, kind of annoy me. I think it's fantastic that we have a female official. I think it's a wonderful development, and she's a real good hockey player. She's a good skater. I think she's got the ability to get there.
So we can thank Katie when you no longer rip the officials.
No, I didn't say I'm not going to rip it. That's all.
Okay. All right.
It's called situational ethics.
Okay. How are your Penguins doing?
Well, we've had a really strong start considering our lineup. We had some injury issues, which are obvious. We had some COVID issues. And the group just keeps marching ahead. I'm impressed with our ability their ability more than mine, to say next man up. So it continues to be challenging, and we start without Sid. We start without Gino. Zach Aston-Reese is an important player for us, has COVID issues. Jake Gensel misses a day or two on COVID issues, and then Brian Rust is a really important player for us, gets hurt. So we face challenges, but so far the attitude's been next man up.
Berkey, how has the relationship worked with you and Ron Hextall in terms of identifying anything you'd want to change with the team and how to go about that? Is there quite a separation between your two roles, or are you guys heavily involved in those discussions together?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. Yes, we're involved. We talk hourly. We talk, you know, when I'm in the office, we talk almost constantly in and out through the day. But Ron Hextall was hired as the general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and that's what he is. My job is to help him, assist him, advise him. You know, can I play the trump card at some point and say, I don't think we should do that? We haven't even come close to dealing with that. And I'll tell you an analogy. When I was hired by the late, great Ken King to be the president of hockey operations, here's what Ken said. Imagine your business partners. Imagine that you and Tree, Brad Treliving, are business partners. You wouldn't walk in one day and say, I'm firing my partner, or I'm taking a month off, I'm on vacation. You would work through these issues in advance, so you never come to any kind of a situation where you've got to say, I can't support this. So it's been wonderful. He's a very thoughtful guy. I've enjoyed working beside him. It's been great.
You know, one of the players the Leaf fans have had their eye on a few years ago was Kapanen. And there was the trade, obviously, to Pittsburgh. This guy's good, Berkey, and he's been pretty darn good for you.
Yeah, Cappy, you know, there was a lot of speculation when the trade went down with Toronto that Toronto got a first-round pick, and that was really a bonus, a bonanza. But the fact is that there was a first-round pick offered for Kasperi Kapanen that had nothing to do with Toronto. So I think he's an important player. He's been good for us. He's been a little bit snake bit so far this year, but he's working his tail off, and he's very creative. It'll get going for him, but so far it's been more kind of a wait and see, but not for lack of effort.
Berkey, you've had plenty of time in the Toronto market to watch this Toronto Maple Leafs team develop. You guys are going to get them on Saturday night. Do you see anything different with this group this year? Do you believe that this team can compete and win in the playoffs, or is it like a lot of people, just frustrated that this looks like a regular season team more than anything else?
Well, it's really none of my business as far as what the Leafs do. And, you know, from my perspective, they've approached it with a methodical approach as far as replacing the guys that had to leave and bringing in new guys and trying to get some new looks. I think they're off to a good start. Whether they can maintain that or not, I hope not, certainly not till Saturday. But as far as, you know, like in my old role, Justin, I would talk about other teams and here's what I think they need, here's what they need to do. It's none of my business now that I'm with the Penguins.
Okay, so let's focus on your team because the Leafs moved up their start time to the game tonight at 6 p.m. So inevitably they can get through some issues and get to bed 1 hour earlier. How do you and the Pittsburgh Penguins combat that? Would you read Letang, say, a bedtime story and put him to bed before 9 p.m. tonight?
No, the NHL sets the TV times. I mean, my entire time in Calgary, we had to play at 8 o'clock on Saturday nights, and our players hated it, absolutely hated it. You remember, Nicky, playing at 8 is that extra hour seems like 6 hours, mm-hmm. and guys hate it. So we've had to put up with whatever the TV times are set by the league, and obviously they're going to move them around and try and maximize viewership. So whatever time they tell us to start, we'll be there and we'll start. So I view it as a non-issue. And again, the league does that. It's not favoring one team or another or, gee, the Leafs get home an hour early or anything like that. It's more how do you maximize viewership, especially with new broadcast partners.
Berkey, we had Mike Rupp on earlier on the show, and he was talking about your Penguins team and how it seems like without the big names in the lineup, it's almost like guys feel more emboldened to be drivers rather than just passengers. Do you think there's a thing, and not just with your team, but in hockey in general, where teams really do, when they have superstars in the lineup, kind of defer to them and wait for them to do it? Is there some sort of change in focus without those guys in the lineup?
Yes, and Mike Sullivan has talked to the team about that, but I think it's a subconscious thing whether you talk to them or not. I think when you're on the ice with good players, you defer to them. And you'll pass up, you'll see players over pass the puck to try and get a great goal scorer to score a goal or get back on track. And so it does corrode your offense a little bit where guys are overhandling the puck and overlooking, especially on the power play, where you've got a certain number of options. So you've got option number one, option number two, and you'll see guys overlooking a chance to handle a puck to make option number one happen. And so that's a very real problem for teams with superstars. And it's a cost benefit that I think what teams do when they don't have those guys dressed. So Kucherov gets hurt. You see the other players on the team have to pick up that slack, and our guys have done a good job of that.
Hey, Brian, you've had some ample time now with Hexy in Pittsburgh. When you first took over, you've had the reputation of being a guy that likes to put his thumbprint on a hockey club. With a pandemic, a flat cap, has it been tougher for you to do that? And where is the marketplace right now?
Well, the flat cap, you know, that affects any team that's capped, and we're capped. Our ownership group spends the cap every year, and we've been near the cap. It's affected our decision-making in terms of what we've been able to do and what players we were able to have. We didn't have much space to do much. But the guys that we added, we thought were really critical additions. To bring in Dan Heinen, who's been really good for us so far, to bring in a Brock McGinn, who's been really good for us so far. We're really happy with the changes we made, even though they were kind of at bargain basement prices. So from my perspective, there's not a lot we've been able to do, but what we've done, we've maximized the output on. So I think that there's a lot of teams in our situation that are capped or near capped, don't have a lot of cap room, and can't do much in terms of adding or subtracting from their players. So we're in a boat with a lot of teams, but I think we've taken full advantage of the cap space that we've had.
All right, I'm told I got to let you go. You know, I could shoot the you-know-what with you all day, but you're a busy guy, I'm told.
Well, no one told me we had to go. I still got 5 more minutes if you want.
All right. Okay, then I want to go to Sid. And did you know that he was been nursing an injury since, 6 years ago? Because it makes him that much more special to see what he's accomplished with a wrist that was less than 100%.
Well, I knew there was some injury issues there and some history, but I didn't know the extent of it. And that's just what makes him even more special is that this guy has been an elite performer battling an injury for several years. And with this latest iteration of it, with the surgery, obviously it was a gut-wrenching decision to have the surgery or not. And then ultimately the decision was made and Sid's in his rehab. But I'm not sure more thought went into a decision like this than certainly since I've been here, in terms of do we do this or do we not? What does the doctor recommend? What does Sid want to do? And so I think the proper thought went into it. Obviously, critics would have said at the time and did say, well, if you'd had the surgery 3 weeks earlier, he'd almost be ready to play. But that's not how it works with an injury like that. It's kind of how it feels. It's kind of how it reacts to things. It's kind of what the pictures show when they take x-rays or MRIs. So it's a convoluted, difficult situation and a difficult decision at the end. So I'm content the right amount of time went into it, the right amount of contemplation went into it, and the right call was made. Now we just got to get him back.